Hello, Cubs fans, and welcome to a brand new edition of Cubs on Tap. We're back in our regularly scheduled programming. You no longer have to listen to me eat hot dogs and talk with Tyler on a live stream. It was fun yesterday, but we're back in a better result today to talk about. Cubs win 5-3 in the desert. They capture the series victory over the Diamondbacks. I am Ron Luce. I am joined by none other than the Juice Man himself. Juice, first off, buddy, happy Wednesday. How you doing? Cubbies win.
Doing good, man. West Nasty Wednesday. Maybe that's the title of the episode, or I don't know. We'll figure something out. But no, yeah, it's good to be done with the West Coast trip. I know that Cubs on Tap, we dread it because we do post games and late nights after late nights followed by early mornings for day jobs. So yeah, we'll be back to normal kind of schedule where the Cubs are playing at a decent time again, which is nice, but good to win 2 out of 3. Really could have been a sweep, but hey, no use of crying over spilled milk. We'll take a 5-4 West Coast trip any day of the week, even though it probably could have been closer to what, 7-2 if you really wanted to argue it.
Yeah, you could definitely argue 7-2. Hell, I think there's a world you could argue an 8-1 road trip, really. I mean, it's just kind of how the series, you know, that San Diego series especially, I think, is the killer in hindsight. But agreed, I think yesterday's game, like you said, Juice, could have been a winner. But as you mentioned, we are not going to cry over spilled milk. A 5-4 winning road trip on a West Coast trip that usually kicks their ass. I'll take it. I'll take it every single time, especially because they get to come back home starting on Thursday for some home cooking against not so good Miami Marlins team. So a little bit of a weekend fish fry going on at Wrigley Field on the upcoming schedule. But before we go way in advance and look ahead to tomorrow, we do need to talk about today because the Cubs get out of this one, Juice, with a 5-3 victory. And Juice, I think the first thing I want to talk about, pitching, obviously a huge part of this game. And we're going to, I believe, probably talk at nauseam most of the show about the pitching and what transpired today down in Arizona. But what a job by the Cubs' big guns. You've no Seiya Suzuki. Guys like, you know, Alexander Canario aren't in the lineup today. Miles Mastroboni played left field because they let Ian Happ have a night off and DH. At the end of the day, your big guns stepped up. Dansby Swanson had 2 hits. Cody Bellinger had 2 hits. Michael Bush had 2 hits. And even Mike Talkman, coming through in the clutch, had 2 hits as well. That was all they needed today, Juice. 5 runs. The pitching does their job on the defensive end. But it's nice to see the big guns doing their job and being the big guns, especially with guys like Seiya Suzuki missing from the lineup right now.
Yeah, they're going to have to carry the water, right? I mean, you're looking at a team that has a guy like Seiya out and has a couple guys struggling too, I think, over the course of that, this last couple. But yeah, no, it's the Cubs in a lot of ways haven't had a lot of trouble scoring runs, in my opinion. I think that they're able to play to a lot of guys. It's just a matter of, you know, getting that good pitching and getting that sound, you know, play. And how – and I know he didn't have a huge series per se, but I think the play of Christopher Morel defensively needs to be talked about. I mean, you're watching a kid who's feeling somewhat comfortable each day, more and more and more as it goes, at that position at third base. And I remember watching Craig Counsell and him talking about how if he's able to play that position – it opens up so much for them. They have the ability to play guys at different positions, to use that DH as a rotational spot where they can get guys some added rest. I think a lot of what happened last year was a lot of those guys didn't move into the DH slot that were everyday players. And because of that, it got to the end of the year and they were just exhausted. Guys like Dansby Swanson, guys like Cody Bellinger, you know, they had played every day trying to make up the ground that was lost in May. And it's just refreshing to see that he's catching on to that position and giving Craig Counsell that ability to use that DH slot as your prototypical rest day for some of these guys while still having an impact bat in the lineup like a Bellinger, like a Ian Happ. I would imagine sometime soon there's a chance that we see the Nico Horner at shortstop, you know, Nick Madrigal at second, Morel at third, and your DH and Dansby Swanson to give him a day off. I would imagine that's a possibility, and it's something that Craig's thought about. Maybe not now while we're early in the season, but come June and July when we're in the dog days, it's a great idea to throw him there. And by that time, maybe you have guys like Shaw on this roster that could eat up, you know, part of that and play second, third, or short because they have the ability to do so. It'll be interesting to see. I will say this. It's nice to see guys like especially Bellinger, too, who I think we talked about it last night.
Yeah.
I think a lot of these first couple weeks were him getting back to speed because he's just not with the team as early as he thought he would due to the contract situation.
Sure.
And some of this, I think, is him working himself back into baseball shape, baseball, you know, lifestyle again. It's an adjustment, and it's nice to see that, you know, he's kind of squaring up some balls lately and being a run producer for the team. But, yeah, they're going to have to carry some of the weight now that Seiya's gone, especially, too, that the rotation's kind of banged up. Kyle Hendricks isn't pitching very well. Justin Steele's out, and you don't know what you're getting out of J-Mo. So the offense is going to have to carry, you know, tons of water up the hill in April and May, and then you're just hoping when you get to that mid-May run, they're healthy, and then they can hit the ground running.
100%. I think at the end of the day, your big guns are delivering exactly what you need. You know, Dansby kind of was off of a slow start here to start the year. Good to see him have two hits today. Good base running from him as well as the Diamondbacks decided to throw the ball around the yard. Belly with a belly bomb, his third of the season, as well as that. He doesn't get the RBI because of the error. They changed it during the game from a double to a single, but I don't think Bellinger would care. He'll tell you right now, as long as the team's winning games, he could care less about statistics. And then again, Mike Tauchman. I mean, I think that's something that, Juice, we even talked about last night, which, speaking of last night, Jeremiah asked, how was the hangover? Actually, there wasn't one because I'm just a freaking unit, and that's how we roll. I do. I feel great. I feel fine. That's awesome. I feel normal. I feel the hot dogs in me. Like, I can feel, like, the salt in my body, if that makes sense. But no hangover. No hangover. I had enough food in my stomach where the beer didn't really do much. But we talked about it last night, right? You're getting contributions from these guys that are largely hitting in the lower part of the lineup. I know Nico led off yesterday's game because they were playing a lefty, but when they're not hitting against lefties, Nico's hitting seven. And today, that 7, 8, 9 spots, they delivered. They came through in the clutch, and they were a huge part of today's win. They were a huge part of the win on Monday night as well. Those guys need just as much credit too, in my opinion. But again, it's really nice to see the big guns kind of hitting their stride and doing what they need to do. Darren says here in the comments, he says, plus, if a guy like Wisdom gets on a hot streak, they can DH some days and not hurt the defense. Exactly. Again, like you said with Morel, and I agree with you. I think Morel had a phenomenal defensive road trip, if we really want to be honest. I think he was very comfortable at third base, completely showed that he can be your everyday third baseman when, you know, everybody was doubting what he could do. I think especially the play today, Juice, like we've seen the cannon arm, right? We've seen him show that off. But that second play that he made, being off the line against a lefty, having to come back toward the third baseline, make a play on your backhand, and get an off-balance throw off the way he did and hitting Bush in stride like that, that was a beauty of a play from Morel. And just, again, continuing to show the development of him defensively, because he becomes a weapon at third base every day if he's playing there. And having that open DH spot as the season goes on, maybe it's a player like Owen Casey who's scorching hot right now, you know, at Triple A Iowa. Maybe it's a guy like Matt Shaw, like you mentioned a little bit earlier. But it gives them more options to deepen this lineup, especially with the injuries, again, like you said, with guys like Seiya Suzuki and such.
I didn't think about it until you had mentioned that ranging to the right play. But I think that that is potentially something that could be easily comfortable for him. Because we talked about it at length at this show, how much more comfortable he seemed at second base. And that's a normal second baseman kind of play, going into the hole, coming sure. from, you know, deep in the hole towards the first base shade, towards the up the middle. And for him, maybe a little bit of positioning may help him too. I think the one thing I've seen over his defense is the extra kind of set pro hop he's taken on those just routine type plays. I think the hardest part of playing third base is understanding that the ball is going to get on you so fast. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to speed up your thought process or your decision making. You have way more time than you think at that position than when you're fielding that ball. And I think now that he's started to play it more often and realize, hey man, like these are going to come at me with high exit velocities, I have time to take an extra, you know, set pro hop if I want to and make a more accurate throw. And you've noticed that, I think, in early on, he was somebody who he got it, he pro hopped, and his arm slot got in the wrong spot because he was so used to playing second base, outfield, you know, trying to be quicker in his mm-hmm. release, opposed to pro hop it, keep it in that slot, and fire it over there. You know, I think that's now he's starting to, since he's been at the position and he has more reps, and I'm sure he's taking more ground balls every day at that position, he's starting to notice that this position, I don't need to be, you know, boom, go. I can think about it. I can take my time. I can set my feet right and make a good throw. There's no pressure to get it over quickly, unless you have a guy running like Corbin Carroll, which is fine. But those guys are, you know, in the MLB, they're a dime a dozen. You know, I mean, most 95% of the guys is going to be able to take that second pro hop and throw an accurate ball over there. It's nice. He's playing very, very well at that position. Like you said, over the course of the road trip, and I think he's only going to get more confident as he keeps playing.
100%. And Scott from Iowa says here, Morrell is progressing faster at third than Council could have hoped. Yeah, I definitely think that's certainly one thing that is happening here. 85 decibel months, Morrell can flash glove. He just needs to make the routine, boring vanilla play. And I think it's harder with third base, though, because to your kind of your point, Juice, because it does get on you so quickly, there are less just like routine plays that go to a third baseman, right? Like, just in general, like, if you statistically think about it, right, the second baseman and the shortstop are going to get majority of the work. And it's going to probably often be those quick hitters that are coming to get third base. But I think that's why a player like Morrell is so good for that position at third base, because he is the guy that can make that tough play because he has the arm strength. He has that flash in the glove, as Decibel Monks mentioned. Sure. Of course, we want to see him make the boring vanilla play, because that's just being an everyday infielder. But I think just because of the nature of position, like, we're just going to get less of a sample size of those type of plays, just statistically because of where he's playing right now. And Darren said, great point, Juice, you know, be a charger at shortstop and a wall at third.
That's a great way to put it too, because I think for him, in terms of learning the position, he's probably played a lot of second, a lot of outfield, where you are coming in more often than you're just letting it get on you and being that guy who knocks it down, understands that there's time, picks it up, sets, and throws first. And that's something that you don't get in infielding practice. No matter how much you try to simulate it, it's game reps. And that's why I think that he's going to be able to grasp that position. And that makes the Cubs so flexible in terms of what they do at the deadline, too. Think about it. There's one less thing that you have to worry about buying. And if Bush keeps playing like this, then you're talking about how maybe you're just adding some arms and, you know, maybe some extra, you know, depth on the bench or something around those lines. But, yeah, I really like where they're headed in terms of their defensive alignment. If they could pitch, man, this would be a team that's probably, like, what would you say, Ron? Probably close to 14-3, 15.
Oh, easy.
It's crazy how the arms have let us down so early, and they're just doing so well with the bats and defensively that they got two of the three going. It's like, man, we're getting teased here. It's like, we know the potential's there for the pitching. Let's put it all together.
Yeah, a team that's 11-7 right now, I agree with you, Juice. I think could easily be you know, 14-4, something in that general, you know, kind of span, assuming a few of these games don't get blown by some of the pitching. But Juice, I think you just perfectly teed us up to move forward here in our discussion today, because the pitching was something. Jordan Wicks was good. He was not great, but he was good. 4 1/3. I think he gets through the five, if not for the Nico Horner error, because that would have probably turned 2 if it's a clean play. But ultimately, he goes 4 1/3. Council opts 4, as you brought up in our chat just amongst ourselves here, you know, with the Cubs on Tap crew, you know, for the better matchups with bringing a new guy in with a lot of righties coming up in their lineup. But still, 4 1/3 from Wicks, 5 hits, just the 2 earned runs. He only walked 1. I think that's the biggest key when it came to Wicks today, is he cut down the walk numbers. He really got beat up in Seattle with the walk numbers. I believe he walked 4 in that last time out. Much better today. And he K's 5, really just the home run early, was really the only major mistake he made until the Barnhart play. And then obviously Marte is just on fire to start the year. So sometimes the better guy is just going to get you when you don't expect it. But Juice, I mean, looking beyond Jordan, obviously, Hayden Wesneski was Wesnasty today, because he went 4 innings, 1 hit. That's all he gave up. No walks, no runs. He only had a K too, but just again, was effective. You saved a lot of arms out of the pen today. Smiley came in and cleaned it up with, you know, 2/3 of an inning there at the end, even though he gave up the homer to Peterson. But what a masterclass. And what a masterclass roster move, if we're being honest, too, because Wesneski and Brewer were called up before the game today. That news wasn't broken until like 40 minutes before first pitch. And you send Luke a little down in Palencia, who got used a shit ton the last few days, and they're easy to go down because they have options. You bring up a guy like Wesneski who can step in and do exactly what he did today. You saved so many pen arms. And you got elite pitching out of a guy like Wesneski to help you to win. A masterclass roster move by the front office. A masterclass, I think, use of the talent by Craig Counsell. And then just a masterclass of pitching by these guys. To get through a 9-inning game today with just 3 arms is truly impressive.
It was funny. I was watching Cubs postgame before we went live, and they had Hayden Wesneski talking with Taylor McGregor. And they asked the whole process of what it was like getting to the ballpark today from Iowa. They had a home game in Iowa last night. Hayden had said, he's like, I fell asleep. I woke up to Matt Mervis knocking on my door, telling me that he had to call Skip. He called Skip. He saw he had a million missed calls and text messages. Called Skip. Skip tells him, hey, you're going to the big leagues. Get your stuff packed. We're going to get you out there as soon as we can. Tried to get some more sleep. He couldn't. He was up at 4 this morning. There were no direct flights out of Iowa, so he goes to Chicago. He was in Chicago this morning, was in Chicago for an hour waiting for him to get on his flight to go to Arizona. Gets on there, flies all the way to Arizona, gets there an hour and a half before game time, and then puts in that performance. So you're talking about a guy who hasn't had a lot of sleep, who didn't have a lot of time to let any of it process, and comes in and shoves in a situation where I think we're having a way less chipper show here if they lose this ball game. And we're talking about yet another West Coast road trip that ends poorly for the Cubs, like it seems to every year. But yeah, you hit the nail on the head, Rod. He saved arms. He put in a great performance. And I think that it's interesting to see what they'll do with him next, because we were talking about it in the group chat. The Cubs have a lot of, I think, awkward and tough decisions to make before tomorrow's baseball game. You know, I think a lot of them are going to have to be talked about over the plane ride. And obviously Jed and Craig and Carter will probably get together and talk about what's best for the team going forward. But there's some decisions rosterly that have to be made, because it appears that Jameson Taillon is going to get the ball tomorrow if they play. So that means somebody has to come off the roster if it's not Hayden Wesneski, because he had such a great, you know, performance today. Then who is it? Who's the one who's getting optioned down? Because you're looking at a roster with very few options, and the guys who do have options are kind of performing, and you don't want to, you know, send those guys down who are giving you, you know, good performance after good performance. So it'd be interesting. I don't know what they're going to do, and I really would hate to be the one making the decision, because I think the hardest decision and the one I think that is the most right would be the most difficult. And to me, that's Phantom injuring Kyle Hendricks and finding a way to get him right while keeping, you know, the weapon that is Hayden Wisniewski here and in Chicago.
Yeah, and I think keeping another weapon that is still here in Ben Brown here as well, because Ben Brown has just been that good in addition. Yeah, it looks like as of now, based on everything that is being shown on the MLB page, if you go to probable starters for the Cubs for the next 5 days, Tyone is listed for tomorrow. So it looks like it will be Tyone tomorrow. They said he was going to start this week. They just didn't know when. Thursday made the most sense because you tell them, hey, when we get back home, the ball's yours. Start this series off. You get a team like the Marlins, who are probably a favorable matchup for a guy who's just coming back from injury and had a late start to the year. You know, but I agree with you, Juice. Like, Wisniewski and Brown are two guys that are performing that have options, but you're going to have to make a hard decision to open up that spot for Tyone on the active roster. So, fortunately for them, because of it being getaway day, they're probably already on a plane or at least getting pretty close to departing from Arizona. They'll be home in, 3 hours from now? So they'll get home at about 9 o'clock Chicago time. At least tomorrow's a 6:40 game. Again, like you said, if they play, there's rain in the forecast for those that were wondering why Juice said if. There's rain in the forecast like 4 first pitch time through the rest of the evening. So they would either probably play a doubleheader at some point this weekend would be my guess, either Friday or Saturday, I'm assuming. Or they might just try to play through it and keep an eye on it. Nonetheless, but just there's some really good comments here too that I want to get to while we're on this topic of discussion. Some of them relate to the bats and some of the other ones are just some general conversations here as well. But David Snyder a little bit earlier said Bush better, you know, our best, the best hitter, 2 more knocks today thanks to the Dodgers. It was also good to see Belly start doing his thing as well. As 85 here said, the third base position, it was a reactionary type of position, get the ball, make the routine accurate throw, heck, throw a one hopper, Bush can pick it. He played first in college. Yeah, and I think Bush is getting reacclimated to being a first baseman, right? Like, he didn't really play it for a while, so he's kind of getting reacclimated and things like that. This was an interesting one from Dave that I do want to pick your brain on here, Juice, because I have a thought on it. And he says, Bush should be in the cleanup spot, not Morel. Bush is the clear-cut cleanup hitter for this team. Council needs to adjust that. I think in today's baseball, the way I look at it, if you have a deep enough lineup where you can just, you trot out truly the best 9 hitters on your team on a day-to-day basis, your leadoff hitter is typically a guy that gets on base. And it can be completely situational, like the Cubs are doing right now with Horner versus Happ based on lefty-righty. But those are two guys that get on base respectively, albeit through different measures, right? Happ is a big walk guy. Horner's big contact guy, but nonetheless. The two-hitter, which was Seiya Suzuki for most of this season, is usually your best pure hitter or one of your best pure hitters. And I think Seiya was the perfect guy for that spot. Obviously, right now, Swanson is up there. I think that's just based out of necessity and how this lineup shakes up. Belly is the perfect three-hole guy, right? He's the first big run producer, the first big thumper in the lineup at that point. I think your four-hitter should be the guy that's the boomer bust hitter, because if you get 2 or 3 on in front of him, and he runs into one, that's a big swing of momentum. So I like Christopher Morel in the four hole personally, because then also look at today. They intentionally walked Morel to get to Bush. Like, I think Bush is getting more opportunities to see pitches being in those 5 and 6 holes rather than somewhere up in the 2 or 3 or 4 spot, because he's got some protection ahead of him. And then you can't pitch around Bush, because then you get to a red hot Nico Horner now, who for the last 3 games has shown up the way he has. So again, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer to it, but I just think it's interesting, because to me, like, that is right now what's working is having Bush in that 5 and 6 spot. And if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
It's hard to make this lineup out without Seiya Suzuki. It's got to be. And I think the four hole gets affected by the fact that they don't have that guy, like Seiya right now. Because, I mean, you could talk about putting, you know, I have more comfortability moving Bush to that four slot if they had a guy like Hap deep down. Because the problem is you don't want a guy like Morrell who can run into one without any protection behind him. So the problem right now isn't a matter of where these guys bat. It's a matter of making sure that each guy is protected in the lineup and they're not being worked around. And if you were to move Morrell down that run, you would hate to see him get out of his new kind of approach of swinging less out of the zone to do something because he knows that there's a guy behind them who isn't as talented as a hitter. I think by placing him in that four hole, it allows him to be a little bit more patient at the plate as well, because he knows if I can pass that baton down, I'm passing it to a guy like Michael Bush, opposed to if he passes it in the five hole, maybe it's to a guy like Mike Tauchman, who's playing a lot of right. And that's no knock on him. It's just a matter of, you know, due to the injuries, this is what we're looking at in terms of the lineup construction. I like moving Morrell a little bit down, maybe once Saya comes back, and then you can position things around within that four hole to put more guys in there like Bush. Maybe that's a good idea, but he definitely needs some protection in the lineup because I think it allows him to go at the approach that he has and has had over the course of this year. And two, I wonder if Christopher Morrell is playing a little bit hurt right now as well, especially with that hand and finger injury. It seems like a little bit of that power is kind of not gone, but it seems like he's swinging less hard and less violent than he did, you know, over the course of the first couple of weeks. So hopefully a little bit of rest and maybe he gets a day over the course of this four game set here with the Marlins and he can, you know, lick his wounds a little bit.
Yeah, 100%. I entirely agree with everything you had to say there, my friend. But Juice, let's talk about something that you brought up here. And I think this is kind of our great last segment, we can call it, before we do look ahead to this Marlins series starting on Thursday. And that is a quote from Craig Counsell that you're going to play for us here in just a second. But talking about like Hayden Wesneski coming up, taking advantage of the opportunity, filling a role that they needed just a guy to get the job done today. And he did exactly that. But he had some interesting things to additionally say. So I'll let you go ahead and play it, and then we can dive into kind of where we wanted to go from here with this Craig Counsell thought. So, Juice, by all means, please go ahead.
Yeah, as you said, this is Craig Counsell on Cubs Post Game Live, courtesy of Marquee Network.
The pitches and the intensity and the travel, the lack of sleep, but he delivered a poor performance that we needed. And he got us, you know, to get us into the ninth inning. Just a really great performance. Yeah, I mean, it's just, look, we got to, you know, we've had some injuries, like a lot of teams, and you got to step up and you got to get great performances. And today we got a great performance from, somebody we needed a great performance from. And so it's about really players just, getting a shot maybe and doing something special. And we got that today.
And that's the part at the end, Juice, that you brought up that was really interesting, was guys just getting a shot. And I think that's where we wanted to steer this conversation of what does that mean for the Cubs now moving forward? If they're in this mindset of guys just getting a shot, are the Cubs maybe going to get more aggressive with some of the names that they start to bring up throughout the year to maybe fill some of these holes? Perhaps it's the bullpen, which has been a clear struggle right now. Perhaps it's the starting rotation. Maybe a guy like Ben Brown just continues to get more role. What do you think about the comment, and kind of where does that take your head in terms of your thought process?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting sitting and listening to that. I think it opens up an interesting conversation like you were talking about early on in the show with them flying back to Chicago and having some roster, you know, decisions up in the air. I think it's interesting to hear him say, I don't want to like speculate and say that this is what he was doing, but Craig Counsell is a very calculated, smart individual. And I don't want to, you know, cause rifts throughout the clubhouse. I think that him and Jeff McCarter have, you know, a good idea of, you know, what each wants for a ball club. But this is one way that a manager kind of pushes or, you know, kind of strengthens his backbone against management, the guys who make the decisions, you know, on the roster. And I'm sure they work together, but maybe there's a little bit in there of Craig Counsell throwing it up to Jen Carter and saying, hey, I'm all ears to bring some of these guys up and give them their shot. And I think the most interesting comment in there is maybe it's just giving some of these guys a chance. And the most interesting part of that is the Cubs are stacked down in AAA and in AA as well. I mean, they have a lot of talent and a lot of guys that could be put on this 40-man roster, and some of this fat trimming, per se, could be done. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what he's kind of alluding to with that comment. Maybe guys like Ben Brown and Hayden Wesneski today have opened his eyes of, hey, man, like, I know I'm 2 for 2 in this, of bringing a guy up and seeing instant, you know, performance, instant return. And supposedly those are two guys that, yeah, they're very talented in Ben Brown and Hayden Wesneski, but they're not the top of the system. They're not Kate Orton. They're not, you know, Matt Shaw. They're not Owen Casey. Sure. They're not some of these big names that are doing a lot of amazing things in the minor leagues that maybe it opens up a door for them to have these conversations and go, hey, let's just go young. I can do this as a manager. I can manage young talent. I've done it before. And I'm starting to wonder, Ron, if you remember last year when we talked about having the guys like Mancini and we had Tucker Barnhart, those old roster guys, guys who have been in the leagues for a really long time that just weren't, you know, doing well with the club. I wonder if, because Craig is the hands-on manager that he is and is so intelligent with moves and things, I wonder if we're going to see movement away from that quicker, because I wonder if he'll be able to push Jed and Carter to make more uncomfortable decisions, because he does have that say within the Cubs organization of, hey, man, like, I know what I'm doing here. I know what I need, and I see that we have what I need here. Let's bring some of these guys up. We'll go young, and let's maximize this run here. If we get to the deadline and we have to trade some of these guys, I think ball clubs would appreciate the fact that they've had some major league experience coming into their system. If you did want to trade a Hayden Wesneski or a Ben Brown to net you that front of the line starter or something like that along those lines, I don't think that that's going to happen, but it opens up that door for you. And I think that Craig Counsell looks at things much more broadly than maybe a David Ross did, where he's
bingo
just along for the ride. And I think that these are interesting press conferences that come up, because it does allow Craig Counsell to use the media to announce to the world that he's not the one maybe holding this back.
Yes. And
I understand why Jed's doing it, but hey, here nor there, they have to figure it out.
And I think you brought up such a good point. It was something I was going to bring up if you didn't before. And that was like, is the David Ross difference, right? Because how often did we hear last year? I can still remember the quote late in the season of, it's not my job to groom these guys. It's my job to win baseball games. And Craig's taken from the approach of, we're going to need these guys to win baseball games. Like, the roster as it stands is not perfect enough to probably win a World Series. And we talk about it here at Cubs on Tap. And again, this is why people should listen to what we say, because we're kind of smart in this shit and what we talk about. But we talked about it all offseason, that you looked at this roster and you said, yeah, that's a good roster that could probably win the NL Central. But it's realistically going to take a multitude of things. Something that Carter Hawkins said at CubsCon, right? You're going to need some of those 2-win players in terms of WAR to become 4-win guys for you. But you're going to need some of these guys to come up and make an impact. And it might not be the guy comes up and he's an instant superstar, but at least if the guy comes up and he gives you solid play as either a bench option, or he's filling in for an injury or whatever, that is just as important, and sometimes it's going to have to be the youth. And I think that's the biggest difference from a team that is where they are, that's led by David Ross, and a team where they are now that is led by Craig Counsell. And I really do think that's where we're going to see the biggest difference in terms of dividends that it's going to pay for the Cubs in terms of wins, is going to be what the impact is with youth. Ben Brown last year doesn't have the same success, in my opinion. He comes up, he gets shelled in Texas, he goes right back down because David Ross would rather see, you know, somebody else come up that's more experienced, and, you know, because he doesn't want to groom a young talent, where Council has taken that head on, and it continues to be shown. One thing, Juice, you mentioned too, right, about some of this fat trimming potentially taking place over the course of the season. Dave said this a little bit earlier. He said, Mastroboni 0 for 12 to start the year. He says, what do you want more? More of that or a wisdom back? He says, if you need to think longer, you got to go put a hat on and sit in the corner. But as Scott noted, Patrick Wisdom was pulled from today's Iowa game after smoking a double. Scott's not saying he's on a plane to Chicago, but he's on a plane to Chicago. I think he's going to be one of the moves that we see tomorrow as well, is a guy like Wisdom getting activated, because now, especially without Seiya Suzuki, it's nice having a guy that maybe can run into one or two homers every, you know, every 2 or 3 days that can give you some of that instant pop off the bench. Again, this is a guy that played under 100 games last year and hit 23 bombs. Like, the power's there. I know he's not an average hitter. He's never going to give you that. He's not the greatest defensive player. But the power is undeniable, and having that on the bench right now is something they just don't have. And furthermore, without Suzuki there, you know, you don't want to put all the weight on a guy like Alexander Canario to have to be a power hitter for this team right now in wake of, you know, your $20 million right fielder being on the shelf.
Yeah, I don't want to be the guy who sits and poo-poos the idea of Patrick Wisdom, but if he's going to play a lot of right field, I don't want to see it. And I think Council knows that too in some ways. I know he's done that down in AAA, but I'm fine with his bat in the lineup at third or, you know, at the DH spot. I mean, I'm sure he could play a little bit of first base too. If they wanted to give, you know, Bush a day in the DH slot, they could still use that as a rotating piece. They're going to need that lineup to be lengthened without Seiya in here. They're going to need more professional hitters, and he can do it. Scott knows my opinion on Patrick Wisdom. I don't hate him. I just don't like him. It's like vegetables, like certain vegetables. Like, I like broccoli, but I don't love it. Like, I like zucchini, but I don't love it. Like, it's not – Patrick Wisdom isn't the baked potato. He's the carrot. He's the glazed carrot. It's good. It's a nice change up, but it's not something that I'm seeking out at the family dinner table.
Yeah, and speaking of change ups here, Juice, I want to do pivot back really quick to just some of the pitching. I think a couple of the names that you mentioned, right? Obviously, Kate Horton was fantastic yesterday. He's on a pitch count. They're kind of managing how much he's throwing right now in Double A. He threw just 47 pitches, but on 47 pitches, got through 4 innings of work. He only gave up 1 hit, didn't give up any earned runs, 1 walk. He K'd 5. A guy that, again, maybe early on right now, while he still continues to build up into that, you know, that starter duration, maybe he's a guy that we do see at some point this season. I know Kate Horton's the big sexy name, and that's kind of why I wanted to mention just a few of these names at Iowa, Juice, and call out any of these guys that maybe you're like, oh, yeah, we want to see him, or you agree with. But, again, we all know that Jose Quas is down there. He's certainly an option to return if he figures something out. But you still have Edwin Escobar, another lefty who they signed to a minor league deal before the season. Carl Edwards Jr. is back with the organization. He's down there as well. But some of the younger names, Juice, are the ones that I'm really curious about. Now, I know, you know, Dave said a little bit earlier about the young, dumb pitchers, but you're going to need some of these young, dumb pitchers to come up and make a big difference. A couple of the guys that I'm curious to keep an eye on, Juice, and I'm not sure we're going to see all of them right away by any means, but maybe over the course of the season. Cole Franklin, friend of the show. Porter Hodge, another name that I would be intrigued to see. Riley Martin is a name that is used to being a bullpen arm that I think would be a hell of an addition to this Cubs bullpen as a left-handed option as well. You've also got guys like Thomas Pannone. You got guys like Cam Sanders, Riley Thompson, and even Brad Wick, who, you know, has dealt with a lot of health issues over the years, but another big lefty who's had a lot of success in Chicago throughout the course of his career as well. Like you said, Juice, they have options at the AAA level, not just in the form of these, you know, top 30 prospects, but also in the form of guys who are legitimate options to come out and be bullpen arms that, as Craig Council kind of plays this, you know, carousel game of trying to figure out who fits where, especially, I think, again, especially now we're seeing the amplified absence of Julian Merriweather as well. with, you know, him on the shelf here with its last few games. Some of these guys are going to get that shot, and I'm really intrigued to see kind of in just what order these guys get a shot coming up potentially from Iowa.
Yeah, I like two names that you mentioned a lot, and that's Cam Sanders. I think he's got nasty, nasty stuff. He's got a little Yency Almonte in him where he'll struggle to find the plate at times. But I think that he's – and in spring training, he was really solid over the course of spring training at finding the plate. I've seen in Iowa, he's been pretty solid. But I'm hearing raving reviews about Carl Edwards Jr., and that he's really locked in down there and having a good run. It's a guy who's done it before. It's a guy that, you know, Justin Steele on this very show mentioned before spring training had even started. He valued very much the fact that, you know, the guys who have done it before. But those are two names that one guy is a very – would be beginning his major league career, and the other is – you know, trying to reinvent himself in a place that is familiar to him. So, yeah, Riley Martin, I've seen him here in my backyard here at South Bend. He's got incredible stuff. That would be an interesting name. It'd be somebody I would, you know, heavily root for, considering the fact that I watched him pitch so many times down here. And it's good to see guys like Keegan Thompson come up as recently and have some success in that bullpen too. And I'm sure that's gaining some trust for Craig Counsell, and it's giving him more options. They just got to piece it all together before they can get Merriweather back. They can get, you know, Justin Steele back. And you know what else would really help this bullpen conversation around? If some of these starting pitchers would go deeper into games, man, we really need to address the elephant in the room here. They are third to last in baseball in terms of length out of their starters. And that is not something that is a recipe for success down the road here. That's got to change quickly. Otherwise, it's going to look a lot like that 2021 season that we did where things were great for 2 months and then it nosedived. And it was an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, well said. Well said indeed. Juice, just two quick things I'm going to add on to here to what you just said, and we're going to look forward then to this Marlins series. Just four appearances so far from Carl Edwards Jr. down in AAA Iowa. He has thrown 5 2/3 innings already, 3 walks, 5 Ks. He has a save as well. A 3.18 ERA is the number he's carrying down there right now. So, again, a guy that I'm sure a lot of Cubs fans will be clamoring to see at some point, and very good chance that we will see at some point here in the not so distant future. And then you also, you know, continue to mention about the starters. I think that amplifies why the return of a guy like Jameson Taillon, who even when he would struggle pretty regularly would give you 5 2/3 to 6 innings of work, you know, and then obviously Justin Steele, who is almost a guaranteed 6 innings of work every time he's out of the, comes out, you know, every fifth day, if not more, which we've seen routinely over the course of his career now with the Chicago Cubs. So, again, getting healthier in the rotation, I think getting Ben Brown off of a pitch count eventually is going to help as well, because if he can get through 6 innings of work on 84 pitches, imagine what he can do when you let him throw 100, right? Maybe he gets to that 7th inning, and maybe even if it's 6 2/3, right? That's still probably at least one bullpen arm that you have to use because he gets those additional 2 outs. So all things to consider and keep in mind as things go on. As Scott says here today, Carl Edwards Jr. came up huge with 2 scoreless innings for the save. So there you go. Big things talked about Edwards Jr. Juice, the Cubbies are coming back home. Thank God, as we noted, this West Coast trip is over. No more, you know, 12:30 post-game shows from us. It will be a 6:40 start, assuming the weather cooperates, on Thursday, April 18th. The left-handed pitcher for the Marlins expected to trot out right now is A.J. Puk. He's 0-3 to start the year with a 5.91 ERA. And as we noted a little bit earlier, Jameson Taillon expected to make his 2024 debut with the Cubs and getting the start. Juice, I will be at the game tomorrow night, so I will not be on the post game. You most likely will be with one of our other great co-hosts. But what are you expecting the Cubs to do, assuming this game gets played, in order to get a win and start off this 4-game set with the Marlins on the right note?
This homestand is all about taking care of business. You're talking about 7 games here. against two teams with under 7 wins. I mean, the Houston Astros are decimated at their rotation. They have 6 wins on the year, and the Marlins are just a dumpster fire and didn't do anything to better their team over the course of free agency or trades or anything in the offseason. So you should have all the information at your fingertips on how to beat this team. And they're scuffling. Don't give them any hope. These are these games in early April here where if you get up 4 or 5 runs, a Marlin team may just cash it. We're not talking about the Diamondbacks here where there's expectations for the season and they're going to keep coming at you with that annoying type style of baseball they play. We're talking about a team that really doesn't have a lot of guys in their lineup that can hurt you other than, you know, Jazz and your Jake Burgers. You can kind of move through that lineup fairly easily, but you're going to have to put hits together because they can pitch every once in a while. They have some good arms within that system that can win you some ball games and give you some trouble, but early and often would be my hope for this series. Score early, score often, get the starters deep into games, and make these next four, you know, just nice, leisurely wins. You know, we haven't really had one of those where we get on here and talk about how great everything was wins yet, you know, where we're sitting there doing backflips about how this team's so good and they win, you know, 10 to nothing. And you have the ability to get some extra rest. Oh, and there you go. Jake Burger's on the 10 days. My bad.
Scott beat me to it. I was going to already bring that up, that one of the big names that you're concerned about is not even going to be playing this
series. There you go. See how you made my point even better. You can move through this lineup pretty easily, be aggressive. That makes no excuses for these starting pitchers. None at all. Be aggressive. Get strike one early. Get runs early. Shut it down. Win easily. We need to stack some easy wins. Some low stress, no, you know, heart attack level stuff going on here. But it'd be nice to have those, and that way you can have guys like Alzolay, who have kind of struggled, you know, go out there in a non-safe situation and work on things and get, you know, comfortable again and not just have to be thrown right into the fire right away. So
well put.
Take care of business. That's what's got to happen over the course of this homestand.
Absolutely. A couple of additional notes here. Marlins coming into this one, they are 4-15 on the season. The Astros are 6-14 on the season. Astros won't play tomorrow. They do have an off day. They will start up a series with the Nationals over the weekend before they venture back to Chicago and then ultimately back down to Houston. So just a couple of things to keep in mind here with two of the lesser teams coming to Chicago over the next couple of days. Another quick note here, we will see a lot of Nico Hoerner in the leadoff spot as well in this series, according to MLB.com. As it stands right now for the four-game set, we already talked about Puck will get the start on Thursday, but it will be a lefty again on Friday in Jesus Luzardo, a righty on Saturday in Edward Cabrera, and another lefty on Sunday for the Marlins and Ryan Weathers. So expect Nico Hoerner to lead off three of these four games. He did a nice job doing so on Tuesday in that spot. Maybe that continues to get him firing. And again, something to keep in mind of. Right now it shows the Cubs, Tyone, Imanaga, Asad, Hendricks for the series. Obviously, we'll learn if anything changes on Thursday with some roster moves, but that is currently what is in the cards potentially. I like Dave's comment here quickly. He just said he thinks that Leiter might be a good guy for the closer role. I don't disagree. I think Leiter has been absolute nails, but at the same time, because he has been so nails in dirty situations, it's like, do you really want to take him out of that role? In addition, like Darren said, hard to have an easy, leisurely win when sometimes 10 runs ain't enough. Yeah, well, you know, hopefully that's not the case against these lowly Marlins over the weekend. And again, it starts on Thursday, assuming Mother Nature cooperates and the Cubbies can get game one in at 6:40, and then it will be 1:20 first pitches over the rest of the weekend. Juice, final thoughts before we sign off for the day, my friend.
No, good West Coast road trip. I think if you would have told us at the beginning of it, there would be 5-4 on it, we would be thrilled. Because they usually play this road trip significantly under 500. But they did a good job. Let's all sit tight and see what happens with the roster. I think that's the most interesting thing, you know, prior to Thursday. It's going to be – I'll be attentively watching my phone for Cubs transactions over the course of this next 24 hours.
Yeah, likewise, indeed. I agree with you there, Juice. Also, a reminder, everybody, as always, follow our friends over at the Dingers Podcast, at Dinger Cubs on the socials. Follow us as well at Cubbies on Tap on the socials, at Juice on Tap, at Loose on Tap. Crack them, lock them, fuck them. You know the drill. At Joey Knows Nothing, Teddy Freddy 270, Nick underscore on tap, and Silent Bob underscore 2. Give Bobby Foster a follow as well. He's done a great job. And you guys will see him at some point on this microphone. At some point in the year, we will figure out when that will be. Bulls, Bears, Blackhawks, you guys know the drill. NFL draft is next week, so be sure to tune in with the Bears on Tap guys. They've been doing a lot of cool stuff. We did a fun show, actually, with Quentin, you and I, Juice, so highly encourage everybody to listen to that as well. We had GM Juice over here making picks for the Chicago Bears. It was a lot of fun. Bulls have their play-in game tonight. Be sure to tune in with the Bulls on Tap folks as well. It'll be a good one. And as always, you know, Blackhawks are winding down their season. They play their last game tomorrow. We'll have the season eulogy coming up from Four Feathers Podcast in short order. And again, Cubs fans, your friends like the Sox. We have friends that like the Sox. Send them to our friends. They could be friends over at Sox on Tap. They already lost game one today against Kansas City. They're probably going to lose game two as well. So hug a White Sox friend when you see them today. Because
about to lose the season series against the
Royals. Yeah, in April. In April.
That's outrageous.
It's
bad. That's a new level of bad stat.
It's bad, okay? Like, it's that is a new level of bad.
And I don't even want to laugh at him. Like, that's just sad.
Yeah, it's tough, man. It's tough. But ontapsportsnet.com at ontapsports and on the socials, the ontapsports. I'm going to check out what's on tap in Chicago sports. Juice, it's always a pleasure, buddy, especially after the Cubs get a victory. Cubs take this one down 5-3. Four-game set coming up starting tomorrow against the Miami Marlins. I'm Ron Luce from Juice. What do you say, buddy? We got here the only way to know how at Cubs on tap?
Fuck the Cardinals.
And let's go Cubbies, baby.